which got me into a little bit of trouble.
That's not even funny.
Can't believe we came up with a whole episode, pretty much.
I'd be like, all right, I got 10 minutes. I'd run to the computer, fucking pull my pants down.
The fire is lying.
I can't even say it. So stupid.
Mr. Dominic!
Welcome to the But You're Wrong podcast. I'm Greg DiNicola.
I'm Keith Padilla.
We now join the But You're Wrong podcast, already in progress.
Well, I did it for two reasons. One, I think my comedy tastes are actually a little more in line with Frasier.
Yeah.
And two, it was just what I was binge watching at the time.
Mm-hmm.
When I had this stroke of genius. And it was, my realization of my dream was semi-connected to Frasier 2. So that was where it all kind of... So I guess in some ways I figured if I can write a Frasier episode, I can do anything. Was what my brain was thinking, but... I was like, if I can crack the nugget of Frasier, then I can do anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I honestly I think it's a good choice. It's an interesting choice, but like, you didn't do something that was like overdone.
Mm-hmm. Like, I wasn't like, hey, I wrote an episode of The Walking Dead, or like I tried to do Seinfeld, or you know,
right? Like what? Yeah. I mean,
I didn't do what.
What if people in The Walking Dead knew that they were in a TV show? It's funny because it's true.
I forgot about that.
And I mean, I'll be honest with you. If you said you were going to write a Seinfeld episode, See, and you know what? Like, I think I'm funny. Yeah. I would never even try, because I would assume there's no way I'd be as good.
Yeah. Yeah,
like it's just like you're living up to an impossible standard trying to write a Seinfeld episode. So forget it.
I feel like we could come. Mm. Be half as good as the worst episode of Seinfeld.
I think so.
I think that would be pretty good.
Yeah,
better than
it'd be
most.
Better than a lot of actual shows.
Yeah,
but you know what? I at the same time, it's like, do I really want to do that? Do I really want to make a shitty episode of Seinfeld?
Well, not just for the fuck of it, but if they came to you and they were just like, "Hey, we're doing Seinfeld again."
Oh, back I would on. Try.
Do you want to make what will be the worst episode of Seinfeld 2.0? Would be like, do you want to make that episode? And you're just like, wait, no matter what I write, it's going to be the worst episode. Yeah,
I mean,
yeah. Obviously, like, I will have written a Seinfeld episode. Well, Seinfeld 2.0. Whatever.
I feel like the worst Seinfeld episode, there's two possibilities for the worst Seinfeld episode.
Okay.
Number one is the Puerto Rican Pride Parade. Number two is in the, the second or third season. And it's when Jerry and Elaine decide to sleep together again, and they become a couple again.
Yeah, that's not a good one.
And not counting the pilot. I'm not counting the pilot, because the pilot is just – it's just not – it's very unrefined and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But those two, I think, are the two actual worst episodes during the run. I legitimately think that if you and I put our heads together, we could probably come up with an episode as good as – almost as good as one of those two,
mm-hmm.
if not if not as good.
Because the name of the one where they kind of get back together and they're just like, we can do,
it's like The Deal.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
It's like The Deal or The Agreement or it's something like that.
I think we could come up with one that matches that because I forgot about that one. I feel like we could match that.
That might actually be my least favorite Seinfeld episode. I don't find it funny at all. There's no part of it I find funny.
Okay.
It's weird. And there are literally I don't think there is another Seinfeld episode that I don't laugh at least most of it. You know, like I was just watching it before we hopped on. And I was laughing my ass off, even though I had seen, you know, it was like when Kramer gets the Cubans and then really Dominicans and they're rolling the crepes and it's like it was Mandelbaum and it's fucking hilarious. And it's like I could never write anything that funny. Like, I just know I couldn't. But yeah, like literally that episode when they decide to start sleeping together again, it was such a fucking bore fest. What I heard was that it was actually forced on Seinfeld and Larry David to do it because they wanted a romance plot.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were like, you have to have Jerry and Elaine get back together. And so they did that episode. And I don't know if like maybe they purposely made it unfunny because it almost seems like that at times. But they
were just so pissed off that they made them do that. They were just what?
They were. Yeah, we'll just you want a fucking romance episode? We'll make it shitty. I don't know. They honestly might have done that because they're that kind of dudes.
So when did you say that this episode was?
It was either the second or the third. It might have been the third season.
Okay,
it was like that last episode of whatever season it was.
Okay, it is the ninth episode of the second season.
Oh, it's not the last episode?
No, it doesn't say.
I really thought it was. Okay. No, I mean, I could be wrong.
Hang on. Season two. Yeah, no, it's preceded by the heart attack.
Yeah.
And then The Deal, the baby shower. The Chinese restaurant comes right after that.
Oh, yeah.
And the busboy.
I love the busboy. Busboy is one of the first really great ones. The Chinese food restaurant is, too, but
I think the Chinese food restaurant is probably one of my top couple Seinfeld episodes.
Yeah. It's great because even what it lacks in humor, it makes up for in creativity. Mm-hmm. And being groundbreaking. Like, no one would ever have done a sitcom in a single, like, room.
Yeah.
Like that. Like, and they did it multiple times with that and the parking garage.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to say, that's another one of my favorites.
Oh, parking garage is, I think that's pretty early on, too. I want to say that's season three, maybe four. But yeah, like, that, yeah, the Chinese food restaurant is funny. Not as funny as like maybe some of the later stuff, but it's important. Like, it's important to like television.
Yeah.
Which sounds ridiculous to say, but it really is.
Another one that I like is the library.
You're saying with
Bookman?
Bookman?
Yeah. The library detective's name is Bookman?
Yeah. And just the whole like speech that Bookman gives to Jerry. Oh, it's one of the funniest moments in the whole series.
And the whole thing with Tropic of Capricorn, Tropic of Cancer, like, and he had the baked bean teeth. Oh,
yeah.
Just all of it is just so well done. But that guy, by the way, is a great actor.
Bookman?
Yeah, Bookman's great. He's been in a shit ton of stuff. His name is Philip Baker Hall.
Okay.
I just want to see what IMDb says as his credits here. Let's see. He has 174 actor credits.
That's a lot. That's like Christopher Walken.
Yeah. That's like Harry Dean Stanton kind of territory.
Yeah, you're right, actually.
Him and what's the guy's name? Eli Wallach. Wallach?
Wallach? Yeah, I think you might be right.
He was in 168 things. Oh, Bookman's got him beat, right? I think Bookman's got him beat.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, wow. Of course, that guy was the oldest living actor at one point.
Wallach?
Yeah, living working actor, I should say.
Because
he worked up until the day he died.
Wow.
He was in a short movie in 2015. He was off for a few years, though. Last movie that came out was 2010. But he worked pretty regularly up until there, and he was died at the age of 98. So can't really blame the guy.
Nah, I guess I don't blame him.
We're at Bookman, Seinfeld, The Library. Great episode. That's what, season 3?
Bookman?
Yeah.
I feel like it might be a little later than that.
Like season 3? What are you thinking?
Bookman? I feel like that might be season 4.
Oh, okay. You're thinking season 4? What episode? Like early, late?
I think it's like later in season 4.
What are you thinking, like 15 to 20 range?
are you testing me?
I just want to see. I want to see what you get to, and then I'll tell you what the truth is.
I would say it's probably around episode 15 of season 4.
Okay. See. Survey says the episode was the 5th episode of the show's 3rd season.
Damn it.
So, okay. You were like a year behind. That's not bad, though. I would have been able to call it. I probably would have said season 4 beginning.
I know a lot of Seinfeld.
Yeah, but when you watch it all out of order after school, like the early ones and stuff, you don't know what's what.
True.
Let's see what we got here. So let's see. We covered this. I don't know if that made the recording of it. We're all good, though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Greg's gourd is out of the oven.
The gourd is out.
Things are pretty good. I'm trying to find what I was going to bring up to you. So did you probably saw it on the book that my wife is in a show. Or wasn't a show the last couple weekends.
I heard something about that. Yes, yeah. Yes.
A show called Godspell.
Godspell.
Yes, because it's the root of gospel, or gospel is the root of that. No, I think it's Godspell is the root of gospel. Just like Goodspeed is the same as Godspeed, and Go Fuck the Prom Queen from The Rock or whatever.
Is that a thing?
Yeah, because Nicolas Cage's name is Goodspeed, and then Sean Connery tells him it's Godspeed, and then at some other point in the movie, he talks about, losers always whine about their best, winners go home and fuck the prom queen.
Then
Nicolas Cage looks at him and goes, my wife was the prom queen. He doesn't say exactly that because he knows the name of his wife. I don't remember that detail in the movie.
Yeah, I don't either.
But yeah, that was actually a decent movie.
Mm. It was all right.
I liked it. I remember liking it. It's a good action movie.
It's entertaining. It is entertaining. Which, I guess for an action film, is pretty much all you can ask for.
I say
not all you can ask for, but that suffices.
When I say something's a good movie, it means that, like, you know, I was... It's a good movie to watch. I'm not saying
you'd watch it again.
Yeah, I'm not saying, like, it's a testament to filmmaking. I'm not saying it's as good as, like, Gone with the Wind, which I've never seen, or Casablanca, which I have seen.
Not saying it's as good as this film that I don't know.
But, you know, that's the one that everybody goes, oh, my God, he said damn and shit on the thing.
Yeah, you know, and
holy fuck,
Mae West,
Mom,
gave him a blowjob.
Yeah. See, that was a post-credits scene. They didn't have those in your days.
Dude, so. That would be sick if, like, in a post-credits, she gave him, like, head.
Like, one day we just find the missing role of Gone with the Wind.
Oh my god, that'd be great. Can you imagine we'd be so famous? Be like, hey, just so you know, and this is in the fucking Library of Congress.
And we find the role in the Library of Congress?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my, so we are investigating the Library of Congress and we just happen to find it.
Harry Reid J.O.'s to it.
Oh man.
That wouldn't be surprising, he's a weirdo. Yeah.
You wouldn't even try to J.O. to that if they suddenly discovered it?
I don't know if I could. Would you? Has it been remastered?
Yes. How pixelated is it?
That's like, are we talking... I mean, the movie was filmed a long time ago.
What's the damage on the pixels, Ma? Like, what's going on here?
Yeah, I mean, is it going to be like when I was J-O-ing, like, in the late 90s? Because that wasn't very good.
Is it like when I was jerking off to the Scrambled Spice Channel?
Like, at this point, I'm not going back there. I'm not going back to, like, jerking to, like, still pictures.
I can't do this. It doesn't matter how famous the lady was, unless it was Grace Kelly, because, you know, Grace Kelly would do it for me, you know? Well, I'm just saying, you know, okay. I don't want to go backwards unless it's for Grace Kelly.
You know who I'd love to see a good sex tape for, like, an older actress? Faye Dunaway.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I would have loved to see, like around, like... mid-70s, like, Towering Inferno, like, her getting, like, railed by Paul Newman or something.
Mm.
Yeah, that would have been good. Not that I care that it, well, I don't know, Paul Newman, he's a good-looking guy, but no, but yeah, her, that would have been good.
Actually, what would have been perfect and, like, fit into it is, like a porn version of the Thomas Crown Affair starring her.
Oh, yeah. Because
there's that scene that the whole chess game thing comes from in Austin Powers that's very sexual.
Yes, yeah. That would have been good. I thought you were going to somehow bring Fred Astaire into it.
That would have been...
I was going to be like, no, not at all.
Yeah. Wait, you want to see Fred Astaire fuck that other one? What was her name? Because he's known with dancing for, like, specifically with one particular woman for a while, right? Ginger Rogers.
Not the Daredevil carpet sweeper.
Yeah, no. Holy shit, I forgot about
that. Remember that commercial?
Oh my god, that is a great pull.
Dude, that was like... I remember the first time, like, my grandparents were watching TV and fucking they show Fred Astaire dancing with the fucking carpet sweeper. And they were, like, losing their minds. They couldn't believe the technology. They were like, how did they do
it? What? I thought he was dead.
Yeah. Oh, they were going apeshit over fucking Fred Astaire with the vacuum thing. I was like, that thing doesn't even work. Oh, man, I'm dating myself.
Oh, man, I forgot that. Yeah, he did all that shit with dancing with the... Was it the vacuum? Or was it the...
It was the vacuum that looked like the broom.
I feel like... Oh, no, that's not a vacuum. Like, they just use that at, like, fast food restaurants and shit, you know?
No, wasn't it?
No, I don't... I think it was just that thing on rollers.
I thought he had the one that it looked like... It looks like a broom, but it sucks.
Okay. No, I see... Here, I see one of him coming downstairs, and it's something with a... like he's holding the extension.
Yeah.
Okay. And then here's one of him dancing with that thing that looks like a broom, but I don't think it was a vacuum.
I really thought it was.
I don't think it was a vacuum.
I thought it was pot vacuum. It was like a hybrid.
Oh God. Let's see. Here's the actual commercial. Oh wait, I'm playing it through my headphones, so nobody can hear it.
That's all right.
Okay, you know what? You're right. It's the sweep vacuum.
Okay.
It sweeps and sucks at the same time.
Sounds like my ex-wife.
Yeah.
Anyways.
So you're right about that.
I don't know where the hell we're going to go with that. Oh, we were talking about possible sex tapes of old stars.
Of famous people. How do we
get to Fred Astaire?
Oh, Gone with the Wind.
Inferno. Faye Dunaway.
Yeah. Keep going.
And then Fred Astaire.
We went Faye Dunaway. Going back. Yeah, going back. Gone with the Wind. Then The Rock. Godspeed, Godspell is what we were talking about.
God, oh, wow. Oh, my God. No, I really forgot that we were ever there. Is that how we started on that?
Yes. Wow. Hang on.
That was good.
I completely agree. Before we get to, get back to my Godspell related story.
Yeah.
We didn't even talk about your work thing.
Oh, you know, I know.
All right, we'll backtrack to that. Going back to The Rock. Here, I want to go back to The Rock. I just think it's interesting. I was on the Wikipedia page. Screenplay by David Weisberg, Douglas S. Cook, who I have no idea who those people are. But they do warrant Wikipedia pages. David Weisberg wrote Double Jeopardy.
Oh, with Ashley Judd?
Mm-hmm. Oh, Douglas S. Cook also wrote Double Jeopardy.
Oh. I didn't think the script was good enough that it warranted two people.
Yeah, no. There's another guy credited on here, Mark Rosner. He doesn't have a Wikipedia page, so I can't tell you what he's good for. Let me know if you recognize any of the three uncredited names that apparently worked on the script.
Mm.
Jonathan Hinesley.
No, I guess not.
No. He worked on a couple things that you might have been aware of. Jumanji.
Mm.
Die Hard with a Vengeance. The Saint. Armageddon. 2004... The Punisher, and...
Was that the one with Travolta?
Yeah. That one's probably the best of them, though. Of all the Punisher movies that they made.
No, the one after that's okay.
Eh.
That's another story for
Maybe me. I should look at it again. Anyway.
So this guy's done a bunch.
So that guy's done some stuff. He was uncredited on there. The next two, Aaron Sorkin...
No, never heard of him.
No.
He hasn't really done that much.
He apparently did some work on there. Hang on, let me... Oh, fuck, this guy's name is so weird. Let me sound it out here. Quentin Tarantino? Look at that.
Oh, is he one of those Italians?
Yeah, that's a weird name. Or maybe it's... Is it Quentin, maybe? Quentin Tarantino? Yeah. Could that be it?
Wait, you're gonna tell me that co-writers?
So what an uncredited script reference means, like in Wikipedia or IMDb, like screenwriters will be hired to do like a brush up.
Yeah.
And they may change some things, but depending on how much of their script that, or the version that they wrote ends up in the final script determines whether or not they get credited as with a writing credit.
Uh-huh.
So these guys might have done a punch up on the script at different points.
Yeah.
They did not do enough to actually get credited. But I never knew that about Aaron Sorkin, that he worked on The Rock. Wow. I knew he did. He's punched up, from what I hear, a lot of scripts. And like that was a job for a while where they would just call him and be like, yeah, we need you to punch this up. And he would just kind of, there's a term for it.
I feel like I know this term.
Script doctor.
Yeah, they docked it.
They would just kind of like change some things, write a few things, give some advice, but they weren't necessarily like do a whole draft on it. But supposedly, yeah, he's done a lot. I think he was on like the first Spider-Man movie.
Sorkin?
Yeah. I think he did a punch up on that too at one point. Anyway, Godspell.
Yeah.
Godspell. I want to say these people did a fantastic performance.
Did they?
Yeah. Like,
not just your wife. Like, you know,
like, yeah, like, I'm not just because, like, I know these people. Well, I know half of them, at least, and that were in this one. Obviously, a little bit more now. But going in, knew probably about half. You know, my wife did the choreography and everything, but there were things that weren't choreography that were good, that were funny. I don't like the content of Godspell as much. Like, I think just being a lapsed Catholic, I have issues with that, you know? Like, it just seems too preachy.
I don't know. I know nothing about it.
Oh. Yeah, why would you? Basically, it's like 12 people or 13 people. One is Jesus, the other one are his disciples, and they like retell parts of the Bible and stuff.
Yeah.
I just don't like the content of it. There's not really a story to it except like the story that I heard every Sunday, you know?
Okay.
Anyway, where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
Is I forgot about this society that is possibly taking over the world until I went to the show just recently, and I've heard them referenced before in terms of like being people that come to musicals and plays and stuff like that, but I'm worried about their power. I don't know if you've ever heard of them, Greg. It's called the Red Hat Society.
Oh, God, no. This is a thing?
You've never heard of the Red Hat Society?
I don't think I want to. It sounds scary. It's the people that creep on musicals?
Well, Greg, let me because I looked it up for you. I got some deets. It's like probably four hosses.
There's
Wikipedia on it. The Red Hat Society is an international social organization. Let me know when you first get mad. Okay, by the way, just feel free to speak up.
I'm already mad.
When you get okay. By international social organization?
Yeah.
Or just Red Hat Society? Is that what got you?
No, social organization. I bet these people a bunch of fucking antisocials.
Originally founded in, you want to guess the year?
I'm gonna say 1985.
1998. For women age, take a guess.
When do women start getting ugly? 28 to 28 to 60.
Uh, Women age 50 and beyond.
So I was wrong about the 28th thing.
You were wrong about the 28th thing.
Damn.
But now, open to all women. All women. Very, guess how many chapters good. There are in the United States?
Oh, God. I'm going to say 76.
20,000.
How? That's not even possible. 20,000? Are there even 20,000 towns in the country?
Oh, actually, hang on. Let me reread it. 20,000 chapters. Oh, that's in the United States and 30 other countries.
I still think that's stupid. I don't care if that's like including people on other planets. That's too many.
People that they think have formed their own Red Hat Society on Mars.
Yeah, yeah.
By the way, have you seen The Martian?
No, I haven't.
It's good. You should watch it. Yeah. And we can talk about it.
I wanted to see that.
I just watched it on Saturday? No, not Saturday. Wednesday.
Good story.
No, but it's good is what I'm saying.
Okay. Gotcha.
So in the fall of 1997, Sue Ellen Cooper, an artist from Fullerton, California, purchased an old red fedora for $7.50 from a thrift shop during a trip to Tucson, Arizona. When a good friend was nearing a 55th birthday, Cooper cast about. It really says that, cast about.
Cast about.
Cast about for an idea for an original gift. Inspired by a well-known Jennifer Joseph poem, Warning, which begins, "When I am an old woman, I shall wear purple with a red hat which doesn't go and doesn't suit me." And ends, "And therefore they called me Carmen Sandiego."
I feel like you added that last part of it.
Yeah, I feel like I did too. Cooper wanted to encourage her friend to grow older in a playful way. Here's a hat. Remember, you're not growing older. You're aging backwards like that Benjamin Button guy.
Sometimes I have trouble with figuring out what you've added in and what you're reading.
Only because the things I bring up are so ridiculous, anything could be true.
But that's, yes, yeah, sometimes.
Okay.
Continue.
Let's see. She gave her friend a red hat of her own, suggesting that she keep it as a reminder to grow playfully and on her own terms. The symbolism ridiculous. Behind the red hat had an impact on women Koopa encountered. Those women responded by wearing their own red hats and entering a new women's movement that embraced a renewed outlook on life, filled with fun and friendship, fulfilling lifelong dreams. Koopa repeated the gift on request several times, and eventually, several of the women bought purple outfits and held a tea party on April 25th, 1998. The Red Hat Society was born. let's see. Koopa. Oh no, I'm sorry, I read that part. Next part. After spreading, I just want to say Koopa again.
Yeah, I know you did.
After spreading by word of mouth, the society first received national publicity in the year 2000 through the magazine Romantic Homes and a feature in the Orange County Register.
Oh, wonderful.
All right.
Sorry. just annoyed me.
Oh, okay. Don't worry. You won't be annoyed by this next part.
I'm almost certain that I will.
Cooper then established a hat quarters.
Oh, that's so douchey. A hat quarters. Oh, where was the hat quarters?
Oh, it actually doesn't say in this part.
How could it not say?
Excuse me. Hang on. Ugh. Let me scroll up here. Headquarters. Headquarters.
Like, I really shouldn't care, but.
Are in Fullerton, California.
Oh, Fullerton. Ooh, yeah, beautiful.
Yeah. So she then established a headquarters to field the hundreds of email requests for helping start chapters. She now serves as Exalted Queen Mother.
Are you serious?
I'm not making this up.
Exalted Queen Mother.
Exalted Queen Mother, and has written two best-selling books about the society, The Red Hat Society, Friendship and Fun After 50, published in April 2004, and hang on. Do you have something to say about that?
Well, Friendship and Fun. No. All right. Continue.
No, get something out.
I was going to say, what the hell do they do?
Well, Greg.
Well, they just commiserate about being old and stupid.
I will get to the organization in a moment. I have to read you the title of the other book that she wrote that was published in April 2005. Granted, we're talking 10 years ago, but still, it applies. The Red Hat Society's Laugh Lines, Stories of Inspiration and Hattitude.
Oh, God. This sounds like worse than chicken soup for the soul.
I was reading about this in intermission because I was like, oh, my God, that woman's in the Red Hat Society because she's wearing all red and purple.
Yeah.
And I was like, I should look this up. So I'm scrolling through. I got to Hattitude, and I was like, oh, my God, Greg has to hear about this.
Oh, so. Hattitude. This is so douchey.
It's so terrible. The Red Hat Society memberships increased through word of mouth, growing from two chapters in 1999 to over 70,000 members.
So they have 70,000 members, but 20,000 chapters?
Yeah, well, it's a dying industry, Greg.
They have like an average of like 3 1/3 person per chapter.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
They're just ladies that like to hang out. But then, yeah, because there's, if you do the math, because there has to be chapters that have, like, 10 women in them. So yeah. There has to be chapters with one person.
Oh, yeah, there's chapters that are singular women.
Oh, God, that's so sad.
I don't feel that bad.
Well, to recognize those women that stand out, in 2011, the Red Hat Society started a process of nominating a member to be the Red Hatter of the Year. Nominees are made up of inspiring women who deserve recognition for the impact they have made in the lives of others. The Red Hatter of the Year is the highest national recognition given to a member who shows impact, dedication, and involvement to her community.
But what do they do?
It gives the highest recognition of the Red Hat Society.
It's like the Medal of Honor for the Red Hats.
Yeah, nobody else will hear about it. It's only been going on for 4 years. We got Linda
Thronstad.
Barb Lesiak.
Of course there's someone, a Barb.
Mary Mibbs.
There's got to be an Ethel.
No, and then most recent winner announced, they don't have 2015. Updated in here, they have 2014 Marilyn Cresci. So,
oh.
Good for them for inspiring.
So,
you want to know what they do?
What do they do? Let's cut to the chase. Yeah.
I just wanted to get to Hattitude. I'm sorry. Red Hat Society is an international society of women that connects, supports, and encourages Women in the Pursuit of Fun, Friendship, Freedom, Fulfillment, and Fitness. The five Fs. Or as we call...
I've got five.
Or, yeah.
I've got five Fs too, but they're not the same.
Or as we like to call it in the Black Hat Society, gangbang.
Yeah.
Five Fs. Five Fs. While supporting members in the quest to get the most out of life. The Red Hat Society's primary purpose is social interaction and bonding among women. In the early part of their lives, most women give their all to family, career, and community. And they enjoy it. But along the way, sometimes, their existing bonds of friendship gradually diminish.
Okay. Okay.
That might be one of the most sexist things I've ever read. Because the society is assuming that all women in the early part of their lives dedicate everything to family, career, and community. But, like, when you say that, people think you're being sexist. You know
well,
what I mean?
Well, no, that does, yeah, but that doesn't mean it's sexist. That just means you're speaking... I mean, you might be speaking in generalities, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're wrong.
I'm just saying for a society of women, that seems kind of weird that they would use that.
Well, maybe they're not quite as douchey in PC as...
Maybe not.
I hope not.
Maybe they like to drink a bunch.
Maybe they do. Maybe they want to get weird.
Maybe they want to go to a Foreigner concert. Oh, that'd be awesome.
Oh, yeah.
You, me, and a bunch of Red Hats.
Yeah.
Although there's some, you know, women in their 50s are looking pretty good now.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
I mean, compared to before.
I mean, yeah, compared to when I was, like, 10, sure.
Yeah. Anyway. Where the fuck was I in this? Oh, membership in the Red Hat Society can be used for reconnecting old friends, making new friends, and rediscovering the joy of getting together with other women for the express purpose of having fun.
For the express purpose of it, so you can't do anything else? Not that I'm insinuating that anything else is going to happen.
I mean, well, no, but that would count as fun, right?
What, like fingering?
Yeah. Wouldn't that be fun for them?
I guess.
Otherwise, then why would they do it?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Anyway, so we're in agreement that that part sounds dirty?
It does sound a little weird. Okay. I mean, that was the first thing I thought of, but I'm kind of fucked up.
The society promotes periods of recess from the cares and duties of everyday life in which members gather for no other purpose than to play.
Sounds a little weird, too.
Yeah, this is not weird. The benefits of being a part of the Red Hat Society include interpersonal connections and emotional support systems built among sisters, parentheses, other members. Both online and offline.
It doesn't just mean black people.
No. Just as a picture of Whoopi Goldberg from Track 2. members of the society support one another in every life stage from all corners of the globe. Red Hat Society members are reshaping the way women are viewed in today's culture by promoting not only fun and friendship, but freedom from stereotypes and fulfillment of goals and dreams.
Oh, God. What a bunch of garbage.
The Red Hat Society sees physical fitness as the foundation on which they base healthy, rewarding lives.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, this is good. A founder or leader of a local chapter is usually referred to as a queen.
Okay.
Members 50 and over are called Red Hatters and wear red hats and purple attire in all functions. A woman under age 50 may also become a member, but she wears a pink hat and lavender attire to the society's events until reaching her 50th birthday. She is referred to as a pink hatter during her birthday month, or the society's birthday month of April, a member might wear her colors in reverse, i.e. a purple or lavender hat and red or pink attire. Oh my god.
Oh boy. Can you imagine dudes doing this? You imagine a bunch of dudes like coordinating their outfits.
It would be like the Brown Hat Society, and we would just all wear black suits.
Exactly. It'd just be the most drab shit. We'd be like, hey, why don't we change it? Because it's so and so's birth. I'd be like, fuck you.
I have all these brown hats. I haven't bought a fucking black one. You come up with this now? Let's leave the society, go out, have some drinks, bang some broads we don't know, throw up on ourselves, and then we'll just come back into work wearing the same thing tomorrow. Huh?
Exactly.
What do you think?
Exactly.
It sounds almost like a very like mad female Mad Menian like time. You know, like a weird reverse 60s where they're just like, we have these social clubs of men that just hang out.
Yeah, it's like they got the grand poobah and shit.
And we have these rules with the queen and the pink hatters and the like. It's just very strange. But if men were to do this, they'd be like, you can't do that. We can't? No. Why not? Because you're not women. Oh.
Yeah. We definitely catch a little flack.
Yeah. Oh. Okay. So if I was women, I could get away with this? Yeah. Anyway, joining the society, women who wish to join the society can do so by going to the Red Hat Society website to sign up as a queen or member. That's why there's so many, because they just went online and signed up as queens. So there's a bunch. Yeah, there's a ton of societies with just queens.
Wow.
No members. The individual can then search for a chapter based on location or geography and then connect with local chapters by using tools on the society website.
I'm surprised they're so technologically advanced.
Yeah. Any woman. Well, it's since they invited the younger ones. Any woman may join the Red Hat Society as a queen of an individual chapter or as a supporting member of a local chapter. There are supporting members who do not belong to any local chapter, but have the ability to include access. Have the ability to include access to the. You know, that doesn't make sense. Access to the Red Hat Society website, online communities, special communications, and discounts. Ooh, discounts. Let's see. Activities, both red and pink hatters often wear very elaborate sheds. Feather boas are big, apparently.
Of course it is.
Positive life outlook through the sisterhood of a local chapter. Members gather in large and small local chapters to have fun, support one another. Let's see. The society's events vary depending on the chapter, but one of the most common activities among red hatters include hosting a tea party, playing games, going to the movies or theater events, traveling on excursions, and to large Red Hat Society conventions.
Conventions, well.
Yeah. Let's see. There's some stuff in pop culture. Worldwide membership doesn't really matter. Publications.
Oh, boy.
See. So we got...
I can't wait to see what the plays on Red Hat they say. Like, with the it'll be like a magazine.
Actually, it's not that bad. I think we've already heard the worst one. Designer scrapbooks of the Red Hat Society way. Red hats and the women who wear them. Eat dessert first. The Red Hat Society dessert cookbook. That's stupid. Let's see. Fun and friendship after 50. Laugh lines, story of inspiration and attitude, which I know is your favorite. Sassy, classy, and still sparkling, celebrating life after 50.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah. And let's see, the chapters, highlights include, Austria, Ecuador, Guam, Luxembourg, Namibia, Norway, Panama, South Africa, Taiwan, Trinidad, and Tobago.
Oh, very exciting.
So you too, ladies, can be a member of the Red Hat Society, which is possibly taking over the world.
Yeah, it's like the Bilderberg and the Red Hats.
Yeah, yeah. I want to know, but here's the thing, though. I really just want to know how many members are over the age of 50. Oh, well, that too. And I want to know how many are over the age of 50 and how many are under the age of 50.
I bet it's closer in... I bet the ratio is closer than you'd think. I bet there's...
It's almost like 50-50?
I don't know about 50-50, but I bet it's like 60-40.
Okay.
Like, a little bit more older, but still significantly under 50.
Okay.
But...
Would you ever see Sue joining this?
No.
No?
No, not really. Sue's kind of like me. I don't think she doesn't really like people. She's kind of where I get it from. I think she gets very annoyed with organized gatherings.
Okay.
She just doesn't have the patience for them, so I feel like she'd denounce them.
Yeah, I feel like Colleen would, she might, like, only in the event of my dad passing would she maybe consider doing something like this if her friend was like, you should do this. There's other women that, you know, like, we can talk and hang out and stuff. And they're just like, all right. So my mom would go, and then very quickly she would call me up and be like, I fucking hate this. Get me out of here.
Yeah. Yeah, like, yeah, I agree. Like, if my dad was dead, then yeah, my mother might do something like that. But even then, I feel like she'd kind of hate it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she'd do it out of necessity.
Yeah, she'd be like, all right, fine. But, like, because her friend was still in it, she would still go.
Right.
Because she was like, oh, I started this with them. Now I got to keep doing this. All right, I'll go. So. Yeah. So that's the Red Hat Society. Basically, they're just women that go out and do things and try and have fun. And friendship. After 50.
I mean, that's good. I think it's weird. It's good for them, especially the older ladies, you know. It's good for them to have fun, but it's just the Red Hat Society. It's just so weird.
It is so weird, and I'm going to be honest. I feel like, again, I will say good for them. Like, whatever they want to do. But I was just reading, and I was like, kind of whatever. And then I got to Hattitude, and I was like, Greg needs to hear about this.
Yeah.
Because I knew Hattitude would really cut to you.
Yeah, they'd got me.
Yeah.
I'm usually love talking shit. I'll say, as long as they leave me alone, I'll leave them alone.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? You know what? If you're in the Red Hats, you know, I got a don't ask, don't tell policy.
All right.
I don't want to know about it. Don't tell me about it.
Well, here's my original point that I was actually going to make. I was like, there's something weird about it, but I can't remember what was weird about it. This story just seems really weird.
What story?
Like, the story behind it. Like, this artist was like, oh, I remember this poem that nobody's ever heard of except for me. And it's about red hats. And I'll give my friend this red hat. And then all of a sudden, like, it'll just spread like wildfire. And they'll just be like, all these old ladies will go, I should have a red hat too.
Yeah, well, I mean, broads are out of their minds. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
I don't know.
We would never think like that.
I don't know if women would even think like that.
I don't know.
Like, would it catch on that fast?
Do you know? Because they don't make sense.
You know, you're right. I don't know how they think either.
Right. Like, we'll never really know. Like, we can, like, make guesses. And, like, we can make educated guesses. Like, we've been around them long enough to be like, okay, well, I think they might react in this way. But, like, you don't really know. Because you can never, you're never going to think like a woman. So, like, the way your gut instinct on how to react to something is never going to be the same as what a woman's is. It's just not.
Yeah, I don't know. It just seems very, very suspicious and unlikely. It doesn't sit well with me.
Would you call it? It's like the Fellowship of the Ring, an unexpected journey.
Yeah, it's just too convenient. It's too convenient.
You think it sounds made up?
Yeah, I think it does. I think it does. Just saying.
No, I mean, you know, it's not normal. It's not normal.
No, it's not. it's not the Norm MacDonald. So there was something that I thought of the other day driving to work that I was going to ask you about. I was behind a school bus, and there were kids all hanging out in the back of the bus, and you can see them through that door.
Yeah.
When you went on field trips, did you try to sit at the back of the bus? Like, is that where the cool kids sat on your bus?
Yeah. I always did.
Because I always remember wanting to go and be like, I hope I get on first so I can go to the back of the bus. Like, it's weird. It's just a weird thing.
What, that everyone always went for the back?
Everyone went for the back of the bus.
Now, did you?
I did. After I realized that the cool kids sit at the back of the bus, I'm going to sit at the back of the bus.
Mm.
I did a couple times.
You sat in the back?
I sat back row.
I felt like I was usually second on the back or third to back, maybe. Like, I wasn't necessarily the cool kid that sat in the back, but I was like friends with the cool kids, so like I was close to the back.
See, I wasn't the cool kid that got sit in the back. I was like the cool kid that somehow, or the not cool kid that somehow ended up in the back seat of the bus.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure I probably sprinted and knocked people down.
just put your elbow up, bottom over.
I'm just throwing elbows. Aisle. I can do it! I'm getting on the bus first! Oh, that guy really wants to get to the back of the bus.
Yeah. It's like almost like he's got a poo and there's a toilet back there.
Yeah, but there's not. It's just a regular school bus.
That we know of. He cut a hole in one of the seats.
But forgot to cut it through the floor, too. For us, at least, my school generation, specifically that school area, I guess, they wanted to be able to make faces and give the finger to people driving behind the bus.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Classic.
Yeah. So, I remember pushing my way onto the bus, throwing the elbows, probably kicked a guy in the balls, just to get on the bus first so I could sit in that back row.
Oh, yeah.
And then I don't remember anything about what happened. I just remember that I was like, oh, I gotta give the finger to somebody. So I lean over to the emergency exit door, give the finger, don't look who it is, then see that it's like a very like kind old lady probably driving like a Lincoln. Or like a little Lincoln or Buick.
Like a tank.
It's got the little stand-up star, and she's got like the bob haircut, like with that bleach blonde kind of old lady look.
Yeah.
And she just like, I remember that she just looks at us, and then she like tilts her head and smiles, like, oh, isn't that sweet?
Yeah,
and I was like, the kids. Ah. Now, years later, we're 15 years later, at least, probably more.
You're old, Keith.
Oh, God, that was unfortunate. Yeah. I just felt my prostate grow. These are the jokes.
Please, somebody take my wife.
So I'm driving to work behind the school bus, and I see the kids like leaning over, but none of them are looking at me. So I'm like, you know what? If one of those kids turned around and smile and like gave me the finger, I would probably look at them and smile and be like, oh, I remember those days. So then I was like, holy shit, maybe that lady used to give the finger to other people in her day.
Maybe.
And it was just continuous cycle.
It is. It is. I wouldn't doubt it. You know? And then... Exactly, exactly. And then it's just someday the kid giving the finger to you, he's gonna be receiving the finger from someone else, so to speak.
Yeah, that's kind of how life goes.
Yeah.
If you're not giving the finger, you're taking the finger. You're receiving the finger.
It's so true.
Can we...